It is exactly 9 minutes after 9 a.m. Good morning. My name is Oliver Dixon, standing in this morning here on the Talking Point for Kathy Mohlahlana, who's not in today. It is a privilege and an honor to be in your company today. We've got a fantastic show coming up for you today. The second round of public comment was submitted this week in Parliament with relation to the criminalization of hate speech. Obviously, we are still in the process of putting together a hate speech bill, an act that will govern how we deal, criminalize, and sanction hate speech inside of South Africa. Of course, we have precedent, right? Penny Sparrow, for instance, is a good example of what had happened there. And we're putting together a fantastic panel for you to talk about what such a law should look like, right? What should we criminalize and what should we not criminalize? What qualifies as hate speech and what doesn't qualify as hate speech, which is just indecent speech or perhaps even disparaging speech, right? Not everything that's indecent or disparaging is hate speech, and that's critically important. And that conversation's coming up in the second hour of the show. But this morning, as I took a shower this morning, I was deeply disturbed. And I want to get your opinion on it. I want you to give me a call. The number is 011-714-2006. 011-714-2006. You can also send us a WhatsApp voice note, 0614-104-107. Tweet me directly at Oliver_speaking, or just tweet us at SAFM Radio. On Facebook, it is SAFM Radio. You can find me on Facebook as well. It is Oliver Dixon over there. This morning, as I took a shower, I took a shower after I had read the top stories of the morning, and you know, this was around 6 a.m. and getting ready for the day, and I couldn't stop thinking about this article I read in News 24, the Stellenbosch racist incident that took place this week, is one that we've all been talking about, but the latest development in this story is the fathers of the two young men in question. Will be meeting, and they dubbed this reconciliation talks. And I thought that to be deeply humiliating. Incredibly, we're not talking about children here. We're talking about grown young adults who can mediate their own reconciliation if so needed. Yet their fathers were called in. But I realized South Africa has this tendency of differentiating whites as good whites and bad whites. And every time the bad whites act up, they call in the good whites to come and sanitize them, right? The good whites come in and make them, you know, and say, yeah, but forgive them. We will raise them better. I bet you the father of that young man at Stellenbosch is just as racist as his son is. Racism is not innate. It is a learned behavior. It's learned characteristics. So what reconciliation will be talked about? And how is it 28, 29 years into democracy, we're still reconciling over racism every time such an incident happens? And why is the expectation only on black people to make the trade-off of reconciliation? I want to hear your thoughts on that particular story. Do you think reconciliation talks should be what ensues right now? But more than anything, and I read a bunch of articles after that that speaks about the insidious culture of racism in that particular residence. Marais, I think, is the name of that residence. I know nothing about this residence. I've been to Stellenbosch University just once in my life. But I ambushed somebody who knows a lot about the culture of the town and the university. Dan Corder, who is the breakfast host at 5 a.m. Dan's studio is downstairs. I bullied him upstairs because I just wanted to ask this particular question about the culture of Stellenbosch. Here's why Dan is a relevant guest. About 5-6 years ago, Dan put together a blockbuster documentary called Laister. I think millions of us watched it. Laister unpacked and you know, brought to the fore just the deep-rooted culture of racism at Stellenbosch University. And Laister was broadcasted all around the world, even on Al Jazeera, I think. Dan, how successful was it?
Good morning, Oliver. It's so lovely to be on your show. As a friend of mine who we went into combat at the highest level of university debating for many years, Wits versus UCT. Yes, Laister was completely extraordinary. And I want to give absolute kudos to Open Stellenbosch, who during the Rhodes Must Fall time were the people in Stellenbosch who were trying to cause radical change. And my role was in a very difficult difficult moment when they were subject to disciplinary hearings to give them an opportunity to give out their message as clearly as possible about the experience of being black at Stellenbosch University to the world. I can't speak on that with any confidence because I'm white and I went to UCT, but we put together this film and it was quite extraordinary. It became a worldwide news headline. I remember this bizarre moment when I got a call from somebody up in Stellenbosch being like, should we go with Reuters, BBC World News, or Al Jazeera or CNN first? And I was like, I don't know. do them all. Do them all as best as you possibly can. Yeah. But yeah, Leicester was really quite extraordinary. It had three prevailing themes. So the first one was, at the time, Stellenbosch had a very controversial language policy, which centered the learning of academia in classrooms and lecture halls in Afrikaans and English. And there was a very unreliable translation system that took place. Many people felt deeply excluded because, I mean, I don't care how well you can speak Afrikaans or learnt it in school or any language, to then even in your home language try to learn academia at that level of engagement is very difficult.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. The second thing that the documentary was about specific instances of racism that had been experienced by a number of different students in Open Stellenbosch and beyond. And they could say, this is exactly what happened to me on this day in this bar or this residence, like Hayes Maria, like you mentioned. And then the third thing was about a deep level of discomfort. There was somebody in the documentary called Machalechi Matume who said,
he said, we can't be accommodated in our own country.
Literally.
That comment stuck with me and lives with me every single day because it still is how, you know, historically white institutions think about black bodies in that space. It's, yeah, we accommodating you.
Yeah.
We're making provisions for you. It's what? You accommodating me?
Exactly. Exactly that quote I was going to bring up, because Machalechi was speaking about the fact that the university said we're going to make steps to accommodate black students. And he was like, this is my country. How can I be accommodated as though I am a guest or somehow lucky to be there or do not belong as a liver and a deserved occupant of Stellenbosch University? So that's what the documentary was about.
Was there a commitment by the institution at, what was this, 5 years ago?
Six, seven years ago, right? Yeah.
Was there a commitment by the university at the time to at least try and undo the culture of racism at an interpersonal level between students?
So I was quite impressed by the university's response to Leicester, because they didn't try to say, like, we aren't responsible for the culture.
Yeah.
And the VC, Wim de Villiers, who was hauled before a parliamentary inquiry about the language policy, which was quite extraordinary to witness, he did say, we're going to try and do better. And what's been interesting about this incident, we spoke about it on 5FM Breakfast, which, as you mentioned, I host. We spoke about the fact that he immediately denounced this as a racist incident, which I think is a degree of progress, and said that they were trying to do better. And David Cameron last night, who was made the new chancellor, also said that this is deplorable and abhorrent. But it does beg the question of, like, how a university goes about trying to change a culture that's existed for many years. This Hayes Maria kind of initiation. The guy said in the video, this is what happens to black students. Like this is something that has happened. And as I said on my show, there's something quite tragic and awfully, just despicable, honestly, about a white student feeling more comfortable in acting in a racist way, in a denigrating way to a black student. He feels more comfortable than black students feel all the time just being black and students in Stellenbosch University.
Yeah.
There's something devastating about that in 2022.
That's crazy, man, because it's, you know, in many ways, Stellenbosch is a microcosm of South Africa in so many ways, right? Because, you know, racism happens all the time and we just endure it and we just look past it. And it's just like, because I can tell you the feeling of many black students is, I'm not going to address this. I'm just going to move past it because, you know, I don't want to face the retribution of whiteness going forward. I just want to get my degree and get out of here. And the fact that they brought in the fathers to have this conversation, or will be bringing in the fathers of these two boys to have a conversation about reconciling, makes me beg the question, once they reconcile, the culture stays, right? The culture remains a big part of what this university is. One of the SRC members saying they want to disband this residence. Obviously, that's just never going to happen, right? Because a lot of students will feel like this is an attack on white culture, Afrikaans culture in many ways, because that's part of the university culture. But what will it take in a town like Stellenbosch, an incredibly small town, to undo such an insidious culture?
I don't know. It's incredibly hard. Stellenbosch University has got many good things about it and is trying, but Stellenbosch University is also the place where the pseudo-social science that went on to justify apartheid was written in the early 1940s, and it's the place where people who've been going to Stellenbosch and their family for over 100 years are going. So there's legacy there. I'm sorry, Oliver, I just saw a WhatsApp on the SAFM WhatsApp line over your shoulder saying it's not a racial incident, it's a drunken one. And I just also want to say, I just flatly disagree with that. I have been drunk many times in my life.
We've been drunk together.
And not a single time have I woken up answering to a different name, with a new skill, speaking a language I can't speak. You don't add skills, beliefs, or natures when you get drunk. Yeah. What happens when you get drunk is your inhibitions drop, and so more of yourself in your true form is revealed. And I also want to say, and we said this on Five Breakfast also, like, you cannot in South Africa convince me that any interaction between a black person and a white person is not colored, no pun intended, by the race dynamic.
Yeah.
And this student knew exactly what he was doing. And he called the black student boy. And we know exactly what that means. And you cannot grow up in South Africa. I don't care what any political party says about, oh, we're race blind, we don't see color. It's not true in a country that's so fundamentally
It's interesting that he called him boy, right? The dynamic between black and white South Africans, at least in Johannesburg, I grew up in Johannesburg, is of such that we may be career peers, we may be in the professional space, we may be peers, we may have upward mobility in our work environment together, we may even be neighbors in a similar income neighborhood, right? But in Stellenbosch, all the black people are in so many ways still servants to the white families.
You're right.
Farm workers. That dynamic of having black professional peers or black peers in your profession just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
The hierarchy there is clearly stacked. It's not like a city center. It's not like urban South Africa where that difference may exist. And so the relationship that white boys growing up or white children growing up in Stellenbosch will have towards black people always will be one of subjugation, always will be one of, you're going to wash my underwear as my servant. You're going to do this because my dad said you must do this. And I think calling in his dad was exactly that, right? It was trying to reinforce that dynamic between black and white people specifically in Stellenbosch, where it's like, you guys are servants to us.
Sure. And I actually wanted to add something on what you were saying about, like, what will be the meaningful consequence of this. And you spoke, I can't speak about this from my personal position as a privileged white male South African, but what I have seen and what I have been told by many black students is that there's an enormous reason not to speak up. Because sure, this white student is now in trouble. But it's hard for me to believe that this white student ultimately won't be fine. Whereas what happened during Rhodes Must Fall and continues to happen is the enormous weight of the trauma and the burden of speaking up falls on black students well after the moment of speaking up.
Mm-hmm.
So we know how traumatizing it is to go on a national platform or to make a documentary, which we never thought would get as big as it
got. It doesn't matter how much you rise, right? You and I know someone mutual to us who, she has an Oxford degree. I'm not going to mention her name. She's got an Oxford degree. She graduated cum laude from Oxford. Emerged out of the Road Must Fall era.
Yeah.
But because of her activism and speaking up, can't get a job anywhere. She's been blackballed in academia, specifically because it's so easy to shut down black voices.
And even during, like, what we've seen from Rhodes Must Fall is that so many of the people who really spoke up and affected positive change during Rhodes Must Fall were traumatized, felt hounded out, felt absolutely emotionally damaged by the experience. And most of the people who took on these big leadership roles in Stellenbosch and at UCT and at all these universities ended up leaving university, ended up being deeply psychologically hurt by the whole experience, are still carrying the emotional scars of the sacrifices that they made, never felt comfortable in their university spaces again.
Yeah.
For some of them, lost out on their higher education ambitions and opportunities because of being in Leicester.
I want to ask you one final question before we move on. I've held on a guest for too long.
It's good, man. It's good.
One last final question. As a white South African man, do you feel white South Africans are doing enough
no.
to hold each other accountable when these moments happen.
Absolutely not.
What's the conversation like at the Braai? What's the conversation like around the water cooler?
It was on your WhatsApp line just now. It was, it was drunkenness, it wasn't racism, or it was good whites versus bad whites. We're not the kind of whites who do that.
Yeah.
But one more thing I wanted to say, and we talked about this a lot during Rhodesmus Forward UCT, and we spoke about it on Five Breakfast just a few days ago, is that people, there are now and again awful incidences of bigotry that have victims, but very, very, very often you see how bigoted someone is casually when the victims are not around. So in a circle of men, you see terrible sexism comfortably because they feel comfortable feeling like they know women they're going to complain. And white people, we all know who in our lives is racist, because when there are no black people around, the truth comes out casually because they feel comfortable, we feel comfortable. And in that moment, you have to call them out. You can't.
I was about to ask you, if you think of yourself as a non-racist white person and you go home and your racist uncle or your racist grandmother says something casually racist that they may not even think to be racist, right?
Yeah.
But in that moment you realize it, but the mood is jovial, the mood is fun, the mood is family. How do you bring something? How do you disturb that peace and say to your grandmother, your uncle, that's terrible?
I think that you just have to take on the emotional awkwardness and the sacrifice. I think a lot of people go, it's fine, it only happened once, or at least there's not a black person here, they're not being mean to a black person directly, there's
right.
no victim. But that insidious, I mean, maybe, okay, assuming this student's at Stellenbosch's father is racist and the student learned these racist beliefs at home, maybe the father was never stupid enough to be racist to a black person openly in life, and so he was just allowed to let slide. But look how his son turned out.
Yeah.
The consequence happens eventually if you allow the belief to continue to exist. And unfortunately, and this is really hard, but you need to think very carefully about how to handle family who is bigoted, because you ultimately, if it comes out one day that that grandfather, that bride did something deeply racist or penny sparrowed or whatever, you will suffer the consequences for your silence.
Absolutely. Dan, thank you so much, man. I ambushed you here. You had no idea what I wanted to talk to you about. I just said, come up to my studio.
I enjoyed it, man.
You came. Thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it. Give us a call.
Witness a lot more seriously. Take care of myself a lot better.